We're at the end of our series of questions that Jesus asked, and we're going to have a look quickly at the ones that we have done. So this started at the beginning of the year. We looked at, why do you worry? What do you want me to do for you? Do you believe I'm able to do this? How do you read it? Why are you so afraid? And who do you say that I am? And tonight we're going to be having a look at the sinful woman and the question that Jesus asked to the Pharisee, do you see this woman? In the story, both Jesus and the Pharisee, they obviously see the woman, but they see the woman from different angles. And you've probably seen this one before. This line has quite affinity with me. Coming from Africa, I've managed to get close to some of these, and the closer you get, you don't get any less fearful of them. They're really ferocious. But if you have a look at this line from a different angle, maybe it's not so ferocious anymore. I preferred the one that Glenn used this morning, so I pinched that one. So the way we look at people, the way we look at things can differ just from our perspective, the angle that we are looking at from. So this is a standalone story in Luke chapter 7. We're not going to read it all up front. We'll read it a little bit at a time. I was away a couple of weeks ago, but I took the time to listen to the sermons online just so that I could keep in with the theme, and the bar was really raised then, because there was 17th century art being bandied around between the morning service and evening service. And so I went online. I downloaded the PowerPoints as well. And I'm not an intellect, as you'll be able to tell this evening. I'm certainly not an art student. So this is the best that I could come up with. Not so much 17th century art here. So we start the story with an invitation. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, Jesus went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. So Jesus was invited by the Pharisee, not to be — this Pharisee's name was Simon — not to be mixed up with Simon the leper, which is a story in Matthew 26, where that was also Simon, and the woman also came to visit and poured expensive perfume on Jesus' head. That time the audience was the disciples, and they were outraged about the cost of the perfume. So this is clearly a totally different encounter that we're looking at now. We don't know what the motives are for Simon's invitation. We suspect it might have just been to check Jesus out. Jesus probably was a little bit of a novelty at this time. It was early on in Jesus' teaching. And Simon the Pharisee, being — he would have been an intellect, religious leader — he might have just wanted to have a bit of sport with Jesus. We don't know. Perhaps he wanted to show Jesus up a little bit. Jesus had been doing amazing things. He had been going around healing the sick, teaching some radical ideas. And some people were thinking and hoping that he was the Messiah that would rescue them from the Romans. Simon was probably trying to check, who was this Jesus? Because Jesus is not fitting in with their way of thinking, not their way of going about things. Pharisees, we understand, were self-righteous, and they thought more highly of themselves than they should have done. When we hear the word Pharisee in the Bible, they're normally the bad guys. You could argue that their intentions were good. They wanted good for the nation. They believed that a lot of suffering was suffered by the land of Israel because they were not following Moses' law. They were very much for following the rules, we'll be okay. And Jesus came along now, and the rules were different. Jesus wanted people to look at things a different way. Just a few verses before the section, starting at verse 29, it says, all the people, even tax collectors, when they heard Jesus' words, acknowledged that God's way was right, because they'd been baptized by John. But the Pharisees and the experts of the law rejected God's purpose for themselves, because they had not been baptized by John. Jesus went on to comment further then on the people who had rejected God's purposes, which was the Pharisees, and this may have been a reason for Simon to go, well, let's check out what Jesus is about. We see that Jesus accepted the invitation. Jesus didn't isolate himself from people. He didn't isolate himself from sinners. He didn't isolate himself from senior officials. He didn't isolate himself from members of religion. Perhaps he saw an opportunity. He knows how these dinner parties would go, and he had realized that there would be other guests, there'd be other people, maybe even other onlookers. The next part of the story, we have the sinful woman. Verse 37 says, a woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar full of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. So we understand that they reclined at the table. That's what it said in the first verse. So Jesus' feet would have been out already. And Ross tried this morning at early morning communion. I'm wondering if we'll get the same result now. Our neighbor across the road thought that the nativity play that we did last year was the best nativity play he'd ever seen. And it was a little bit, it appeared to be a bit of a rehearsal, a bit of ad hoc. And so I was wondering if maybe we could have a little bit of impromptu drama now of this. Is there anybody here who thinks they've got enough tears to be able to wet my feet? No, I don't see any hands going up. It's difficult to see the hands, but I don't see any hands going up. Is anybody who's got long enough hair and willing to use their hair to dry my feet off this? There's a few glares coming from the back. I guess the answer is no. Well, that was the same answer we had this morning, so not too much of a surprise. This would be outrageous. I mean, if we did this now, it would be outrageous, and it was outrageous then when this took place. This woman broke culture. So women in this time would normally keep their head covered, wouldn't be shown in public. She had her hair out, and she was using it to wash Jesus' feet. This was quite something out of the ordinary. We don't know much more. It doesn't tell us much more about her, apart from the fact that she was a sinful woman. She had a reputation. People in the town knew. We suspect it was a moral life, possibly a prostitute. But she must have changed her life around to have sought Jesus out. She heard that Jesus was coming to dinner at Simon's house, and she made her way there. She obviously had a strong affection for the Lord, being willing to humiliate herself. She wasn't one of the servants. It wasn't her job to do that. It should have been one of the servants doing, or at least Simon making sure that Jesus' feet were washed. She came of her own accord, and all her actions showed the love and respect to Jesus. She came with what she had. She came with an alabaster jar full of perfume. You could say it would have been better if she'd come with a basin and a towel, but she obviously wasn't expecting that. She obviously knew about Jesus' teaching. She had sought Jesus out, so she would have known about Jesus. She wouldn't have just stumbled across Jesus there. She was obviously remorseful and repentant by behaving this way. And the demonstration of her love for Jesus was not limited by what others might have thought about her. Can imagine how humiliating this was to do this, but she wasn't worried about what other people thought, and she must have been weeping for quite some time to have been able to wash Jesus' feet. And Jesus' response, Jesus didn't shun her or push her away. Verse 39, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. He's judging Jesus. He might have thought, aha, I've got him. Obviously, some of his logic was actually okay. Yes, if Jesus was a prophet, he would know who was touching him. If he was a prophet, he would know she was a sinner. But that's where his logic then ran a bit dry, because he came up with the wrong conclusion. And he obviously doesn't understand grace. And he's got a totally wrong attitude. Pharisees had not realized who Jesus was, or did not want to acknowledge him as a prophet. They certainly didn't want to acknowledge him as the Messiah. And the thought of Jesus being God himself couldn't have been much further from their minds. Jesus accepted the sinful woman, but Simon, on the other hand, he just totally written off. From verse 40, it says, Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One of them owed about 500 denarii, and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now which of them will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had bigger debt forgiven. You have judged correctly, Jesus said. Simon called him teacher, but inside his head, he didn't think he was a prophet. You wonder how long did it take for Simon to work out that Jesus was more than a prophet, to know what he was thinking. Wonder if the penny ever dropped. Jesus answered Simon's thoughts. He uses a parable to gently challenge Simon in a very practical way. He must have realized he was answering his question that was in his head. And surely he would have realized that Jesus was more than a prophet. And this must really have unsettled Simon. It's amazing and challenging for us as well to realize that Jesus knows our thoughts. We can't hide anything from him. In verse 44 it says, Then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. So we've got the two contrasts here of what the sinful woman had done for Jesus and what Simon had done as the host of the party. These things that Jesus would have had expected Simon to do would have just been standard greetings of that day. A bit like us inviting somebody into our home and taking their coat, offering them a drink. That's how natural that should have been. Jesus turns it around and then he goes on to be fairly blunt and belittling in front of all the other guests. Jesus didn't hold back. He told Simon exactly where he saw him. How small do you think Simon felt after being talked to like this? Jesus asked him, he said, Do you see this woman? And obviously Simon had seen this woman. This woman had been there at the table. That's not what Jesus was asking. Jesus was asking Simon to look at this woman in a different way. I suppose a terrible sinner had done more than he had done. Jesus goes on to forgive. Verse 47 says, Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little, loves little. Then Jesus said to her, Your sins are forgiven. The other guests began to say among themselves, Who is this who even forgives sins? Jesus said to the woman, Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. So Jesus acknowledges her sins, but also acknowledges her great love. He doesn't hesitate to announce her forgiveness. Other guests would have wondered a little bit more who Jesus was at this point. They hadn't realized up until this point who Jesus was. He could forgive sins. Simon probably took offense at the way Jesus admitted that the actions towards him were from out of love. Simon didn't know any of this. Jesus also knew what Simon was thinking. This must have really unsettled and surprised Simon. Most importantly, Jesus acknowledges this woman's faith. Her love was the effect of her forgiveness, not the reason for her forgiveness. What did the people think? Now they would have known that only God forgives sins against God. Who is this man? Who is this prophet that is forgiving sins? We don't know what happens next after this. As Glenn said this morning, we're left on a real cliffhanger. But this must have left them thinking that Jesus was more than a teacher, more than a prophet. So it's not just an interesting story. What can we learn from the story? The truth is that Jesus came to, he came for sinners. He didn't come to judge. Asking Simon if he had saw this woman, he was just asking to do some self-examination too. And the question we need to ask ourselves, how do we see Jesus? How do we see others? And how do we see ourselves? Are we open to God challenging us? Isn't it a privilege that he takes us as we are? He took this woman just as she was. We don't have to become something else first before we approach Jesus. Nothing in my past can stop him forgiving me. When I was growing up, we had a fantastic youth group. And there was a neighbor that lived five doors down the road from us, and he had an incredible testimony. He was a Salute Scout. He's the guy on the left of the left photo and on the right of the right photo. Not the friendliest person you could imagine to meet. And the Salute Scouts were the elite in the Rhodesian Army, and their training was intense. The time that they had during the war was absolutely intense. And the stories that he told us, all my friends, we loved hearing those stories as teenage boys. We just loved hearing those stories. They were quite horrifying. But he knew that somebody was looking after him. He wasn't a Christian at the time. But as he looked back, he could see how the Lord had protected him. There were incidents when they were under siege. They had run out of ammunition, and they just had to bunker down. And as soon as they did that, the firing on them stopped. The next morning, when they were rescued, the people that had rescued them had seen how closely they were being camped at, and there was no logical reason why the firing had stopped. They just thought, the people coming to rescue them thought that they were just going to pick up a whole lot of bodies. When he came home after the war, he had issues. Obviously, he was full of trauma. He had people dying next to him. And initially, he kept on with a life of violence. That's what he knew. That's what he was trained to be. But he met a lovely Christian lady who helped him turn his life around. And some of the people were saying to her, "Yeah, what are you doing with that guy? That guy's a nutcase." But she could see through the issues. She could see through his sin that he had. He had an amazing testimony, and I can remember at the time feeling quite inadequate. I wish I had such a powerful testimony like that. How brilliant would that be? Part of it was I had a little bit of insecurity over that, because I grew up in a Christian home, on a mission station, went to church twice, three times on a weekend, went to youth group. But me coming to know the Lord was no less a miracle than what had happened to Andrew. And through Andrew's testimony, I learned that nobody is beyond forgiveness. So the question we need to ask ourselves, do we see people as Jesus does? Is there anybody that we've written off? Is there anybody that we have a look at their past and we don't have a look and see what the Lord sees in them? Do we welcome non-Christians who know that Jesus is wanting to work in their lives? Are we critical of others? It reminds me of Matthew chapter 7, just the two verses. "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." I had a look at this in the Message paraphrase, which I wouldn't use for studying, but to have a look at another angle to see what it says is quite interesting. This one you'll find quite funny. "Don't pick on people or jump on their failures or criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. A critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. It's easy to see a smudge on your neighbor's face and be oblivious to the ugly smear on your own. Do you have the nerve to say, 'Let me wash your face for you,' when your own face is distorted by contempt?" It's this whole traveling around show mentality all over again, playing a holier-than-thou part instead of just living your part. Wipe the ugly sneer off your own face, and you might be fit to offer a washcloth to your neighbor. Are we being asked to reflect as well? Are we prepared to spend time with people who don't have the same faith or outlook as us? How do we see others? Do we see them the same way Jesus does? We need to work on this for sure. Do we realize who Jesus is? Or are we a little bit like Simon and the other guests at the dinner table? Do we know his forgiveness, no matter how sinful we have been? Jesus rebuked Simon even though he had been invited for a meal. Are we willing to correct or bring in line our friends or people that we socialize with? Are we willing to rebuke them, correct them? Or do we go about trying to be very careful not to offend anybody? Are we really grateful for his forgiveness, just like this woman was? How do we show our gratitude? Do we pour ourselves out to Jesus just like this woman did? As I said earlier, this woman was prepared to humiliate herself in front of others to demonstrate her love for Jesus. Are we prepared to do the same? How do we serve the Lord? What are we doing to further his kingdom? We need to be careful we're not like Simon, where we invite Jesus in maybe only to a little part of our lives. Do we invite Jesus and then not treat him with the love that he deserves? We need to examine ourselves to be sure whether our love for Jesus is sincere. We need to be careful not just to have an outward appearance, as the Lord sees right through us. He knows our thoughts. We can't hide anything from him. We might be able to fool some of our friends some of the time, but we certainly can't fool the Lord. We mustn't be lukewarm. We need to let Jesus into every part of our lives. We need to give Jesus the place that he deserves in our hearts.